That's what's up. VOA One The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel and Katie Weaver talk about the issue of teaching race and slavery in American schools. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today we talk about Valentine's Day. February 14th is Valentine's Day in the United States. So I will talk about a love-related idiom. We will finish our 30 minutes together with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, here is the education report.
How history should be taught in American schools is a subject forcefully argued by many different American groups. One example of the ongoing dispute was an effort by the administration of former President Donald Trump. It sought to influence the way American history, including slavery and race, are discussed in public schools and universities. In November of 2020, Trump ordered the Department of Education to establish a group called the 1776 Commission. Its stated job was to better enable rising generations to understand the history and principles of the founding of the United States in 1776. However, critics said the group told a one-sided story about the men who helped establish the United States, known as the Founding Fathers. They argued the commission told schools to reduce the importance of slavery when telling the story of the early days of the country. The commission released its report on January 18th. The Trump administration hoped it would provide guidance about history teaching in the country. But critics said it insulted many ideas of education. David Blight is a Civil War historian at Yale University. He called the document produced by Trump's commission a piece of right-wing propaganda.
Observers noted that the report seemed to be an answer to the 1619 Project. It is a series of stories published in 2019 in the New York Times newspaper. The stories are about the influence of slavery on the British colonies that would become the United States. The New York Times collection was released during the 400th anniversary of the year historians believe slaves were first brought to the area that would become the United States. The stories talked about how African slaves provided free labor in some colonies. The writers argued that slaves made the agricultural economy one of the most productive in the world. They said that slavery began hundreds of years of racism and poor conditions from which Black people have yet to fully recover. The 1619 Project won the Pulitzer Prize and resulted in a podcast. The New York Times said it looks at how slavery started nearly everything that has truly made America exceptional. President Joe Biden canceled the 1776 Commission with an executive order on the first day of his presidency, January 20th. However, state leaders who supported the commission still want to influence how public school teachers and public universities discuss the effects of slavery and racism.
In the state of Georgia, a lawmaker asked the leader of the state's university system to investigate how teachers talk about white privilege. White privilege is a term used to describe the advantages that come just from being white in American society. The term appeared a lot in the summer of 2020 after protests over racial equity took place following the death of George Floyd. He was a black man who died while being restrained by police in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Lawmakers in Georgia asked the state university system to survey its professors on the issue of white privilege. English professor Matthew Bodie teaches at the University of North Georgia. He saw the survey. He said it is designed to intimidate professors and called it an attack on higher education. The debate is not only in Georgia. States including Arkansas and Iowa are dealing with the same issues. Representative from Arkansas Mark Lowry called slavery a dark stain on U.S. history, but said the New York Times series reduced the importance of founding fathers like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, who were slave owners.
Nicole Hannah-Jones is a reporter for the New York Times and creator of the project. She said the New York Times series is not supposed to replace what schools traditionally teach. It is supposed to ask people to think about what came from slavery. Some high school teachers are using the educational plans that go with the New York Times project to provide their students with a new understanding of slavery. Jonathan Rogers is an English teacher in Iowa. He said the 1619 Project is valuable. It helped his students think about different sources or alternative storytelling, he said. One proposal in Oklahoma calls for teachers to lose their jobs if they teach divisive issues. In South Dakota, the governor proposed adding almost $1 million to the state's budget to make sure schools teach that the U.S. is the most unique nation in the history of the world. Tate Reeves is governor of Mississippi. He proposed $3 million to fight against what he called revisionist history, or the changing of traditional historic accounts. He said teachers around the U.S. have placed attention on what he called America's shortcomings over the exceptional achievements of this country. Arkansas's Governor Asa Hutchinson said what is taught in schools is something that should be dealt with by parents, not by the state. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. February 14th is Valentine's Day in the United States. For many people, it is a romantic day. It's the day to show your love for that special someone in your life. Usually a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, or wife. Of course, you should do that every day. But on Valentine's Day, there is a special pressure to do so with a gift. Popular gifts for this holiday include flowers, candy, and a card, or maybe a nice dinner out in a restaurant. Some people use Valentine's Day to declare their love for someone. Just be careful. A declaration of love is a serious move. And if the person you love is also a friend, you may put your friendship at risk. There is no turning back once you say the words, "I love you." In other words, there is no putting that genie back in the bottle. Or maybe it happens the other way around for you. Maybe Valentine's Day is the day you find out that you have a secret admirer. That happened to me once, and it was very awkward. One Valentine's Day many years ago, an old flame of mine showed up at my door unexpectedly, out of the blue. In one hand, he had chocolates. In the other, some beautiful flowers. He told me that he never stopped thinking of me, and that he still loved me. I was shocked. I had not seen him in over a year. Then my shock turned to pity, because I did not feel the same way. While he had carried a torch for me all those months, I had gotten over him a long time ago. Still, I invited him in for a cup of tea. After all, he had just flown into town. When I told him that I did not feel the same way, he did not waste a minute. He turned to my roommate, handed her the flowers, and asked, "What about you?" Both of us shouted the same thing, "Get out!" So I guess he wasn't carrying a torch for me after all. In British English, a torch is a simple flashlight. But in the U.S., a torch is fire or a flame on a stick. If you say you carry a torch for someone, you mean you are carrying a flaming love for them in your heart. But usually you secretly love them from a distance, and often those strong feelings are not returned. We have a special way to describe this type of heartbreak: unrequited love. That is an advanced way of saying unreturned love, which we don't really say. I like to describe unrequited love as love traveling in one direction, down a dark, lonely, dead-end street, going nowhere. People started using the idiom to carry a torch for someone in the early 1900s. Around the same time, torch song and torch singer also became common terms. Many of us have carried a torch for someone. That is why torch songs became common. Singers sound as if they are filled with pain as the unrequited flame of love burns deeply inside them. Torch songs are filled with yearning, wishing, and hoping with all your heart that the person you love will love you back. And that is all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation. American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Bob Doty and I discuss American arts and popular culture during the 1930s. Hard economic times and social conflict have always offered a rich source of material for artists and writers. A painter's colors can show the drying of dreams or the flight of the human spirit. A musician can express the tensions and uncertainty of a people in struggle. The pressures of hard times can be the force to lift a writer's imagination to new heights. So it was during the 1930s in the United States. The severe economic crisis, the Great Depression, created an atmosphere for artistic imagination and creative expression. The common feeling of struggle also led millions of Americans to look to films, radio, and other new art forms for relief from their day-to-day cares.
The most popular sound of the 1930s was a new kind of music, swing music. And the king of swing was a clarinet player named Benny Goodman. Benny Goodman and other musicians made swing music extremely popular during the 1930s. Swing music was a new form of jazz. Many of its first players were black musicians in small, unknown groups. It was only when more well-known white musicians started playing swing music in the middle 1930s that the new music became wildly popular.
One reason for the popularity of swing music was the growing power of radio during the 1930s. Radio had already proven in earlier years that it could be an important force in both politics and popular culture. Millions of Americans bought radios during the 1920s. But radio grew up in the 1930s. Producers became more skillful in creating programs. And actors and actresses began to understand the special needs and power of this new electronic art form. Swing music was not the only kind of music that radio helped make popular. The 1930s also saw increasing popularity for traditional classical music by Beethoven, Bach, and other great musicians. In 1930, the Columbia Broadcasting System began a series of concerts by the New York Philharmonic Orchestra on Sunday afternoons. The next year, the National Broadcasting Company, NBC, began weekly opera concerts.
In 1937, NBC asked Arturo Toscanini of Italy to lead an orchestra on American radio. Toscanini was the greatest orchestra leader of his day. Millions of Americans listened at Christmas time as Toscanini and the NBC Orchestra began playing the first of 10 special radio concerts. It was a great moment for both music and radio. For the first time, millions of average Americans were able to hear classical music by great musicians as it was being played.
Music was an important reason why millions of Americans gathered to listen to the radio during the 1930s. But even more popular were a series of weekly programs with exciting or funny new actors. Families would come home from school or work and laugh at the foolish experiences of such actors as Jack Benny, Fred Allen, George Burns, Edgar Bergen, and W.C. Fields. Radio helped people forget the hard conditions of the Great Depression, and it helped to bring Americans together and share experiences.
Swing music, classical music, great comedy programs. The 1930s truly were a golden period for radio and mass communications. But it was also during this period that Hollywood and the American film industry became much more skilled and influential. In previous years, films were silent, but the talkies arrived in the 1930s.
Directors could produce films in which actors could talk. Americans reacted by attending film theaters by the millions. It was a great time for Hollywood. The films had exciting new actors. Spencer Tracy, Betty Davis, Katharine Hepburn, the young Shirley Temple. The most famous film of the period was Gone with the Wind, with Clark Gable and Vivian Leigh in the starring roles of Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara.
No, I don't think I will kiss you. Although you need kissing badly. That's what's wrong with you. You should be kissed and often, and by someone who knows how.
Oh, and I suppose you think you're the proper person.
I might be, if the right moment ever came.
Directors in the 1930s also produced such great films as It Happened One Night, Mutiny on the Bounty, and The Life of Emile Zola.
The success of radio and films, as well as the Depression itself, caused problems for many American newspapers during the 1930s. The trouble was not so much that readers stopped buying newspapers. It was that companies talked about their products through advertisements on radio instead of buying advertising space in newspapers. Nearly half of the nation's independently published newspapers either stopped publishing or joined larger companies during the 1930s. By World War II, only 120 cities had competing newspapers.
Weekly and monthly publications faced the same problem as daily newspapers: increased competition from radio and films. Many magazines failed. The two big successes of the period were Life magazine and the Reader's Digest. Life magazine had stories for everyone about film actors, news events, or just daily life in the home or on the farm. Its photographs were the greatest anywhere. Reader's Digest published shorter forms of stories from other magazines and sources.
Most popular books of the period were like the films coming from Hollywood. Writers cared more about helping people forget their troubles than about facing serious social issues. They made more money that way, too. But a number of writers in the 1930s did produce books that were both profitable and of high quality. One was Sinclair Lewis. His book, It Can't Happen Here, warned of the coming dangers of fascism. John Steinbeck's great book, The Grapes of Wrath, helped millions understand and feel in their hearts the troubles faced by poor farmers. Erskine Caldwell wrote about the cruelty of life among poor people in the southeastern United States, and James T. Farrell about life in Chicago.
The same social concern and desire to present life as it really existed also were clear in the work of many American artists during the 1930s. Thomas Benton painted workers and others with strong, tough bodies. Edward Hopper showed the sad streets of American cities. Reginald Marsh painted picture after picture of poor parts of New York City. The federal government created a program that gave jobs to artists. They painted their pictures on the walls of airports, post offices, and schools. The program brought their ideas and creativity to millions of people. At the same time, photography became more important as cameras improved in quality and became more movable. Some photographers, like Margaret Burke White and Walker Evans, used their cameras to report the hard conditions of the Depression.
All this activity in the arts and popular culture played an important part in the lives of Americans during the 1930s. It not only provided relief from their troubles, but expanded their minds and pushed their imaginations. The tensions and troubles of the Great Depression provided a rich atmosphere for artists and others to produce works that were serious, foolish, or just plain fun. And those works, in turn, helped make life a little better as Americans waited, worked, and hoped for times to improve.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.